My name is Sherry, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Harlan and the committee, and Susan has done such a great job. I mean, that was above and beyond the call of duty, taking us to Safeway in the after late at night last night. And we really appreciate it. And this is the best organized and most thoughtful conference I think I've ever been to. Just amazing. Really very impressive. And everybody that I've said that to says, it's Harlan. And I know Harlan, and I have no doubt about that. So you guys are very fortunate to have him. Great conference. And I didn't get to hear the earlier speakers yesterday, but I got here in time to hear Don and Wayne last night. I was very touched by both of them. I've now heard what I need to hear, and the rest of it is just extra. As I said, my name is Sherry. I am an alcoholic. My home group is the Glass House Group in Fort Worth, Texas. I've been sober since May 29th, 1988, and I'm very, very grateful for that. I had, a somewhat unusual goal when I was a kid. I thought everybody had this goal because I was so selfish, self-centered. I never thought anybody thought about things any differently than I did. And I continued to think that until I'd been sober for a little while, and then I found out a lot of women did not have this goal. And so I spent a few years saying me and the guys had this goal. I found out a lot of men don't either. Turns out me and a few sociopaths had this goal. But it was important to me. When I was little, I grew up in an alcoholic home, and it was just like everybody else's alcoholic home, so I'm not going to go into any detail about it. But there's a lot of violence and stuff going on, and I was scared when I was little. I mean, I was just really scared. And I always felt like I was on the wrong planet. I mean, I didn't seem to have whatever people needed to be here. I mean, it was the wrong place. I was the wrong person. And there was a lot of stuff going on. And so my early strategy for life was I was just invisible. I just tried to blend into the wall, you know, just kind of tried to go, don't see me. If you don't see me, you won't hit me. I won't get hurt. Everything will be fine. And that was until I drank. And I'll tell you, alcohol changed things for me because when I drank, it just went like this. It went, just. Now, and I apologize to the Al-Anons that you have no idea what I'm talking about, but the alcoholics know what I'm talking about. It just kind of, everything just kind of goes, and I wasn't scared anymore, and I was big, and you weren't so small, and you weren't so big, and I wasn't so small, and I wasn't such a girl, and I just got okay. And when I started drinking, my life just switched. I no longer cared about being invisible. I was going to go where I wanted to go, do what I wanted to do, to whoever I wanted to do it to, and that's pretty much what I did. If you had something, I just took it if I wanted it. If I didn't want it, sometimes I just took it anyway. I once stole 126 turn signal levers. No good reason. I don't even think I needed one, but here's the really weird part. One of the people that one of my grandbabies, somebody I sponsors her, stole a bird bath. And I just have this vision of the two of us, if we'd been drinking together, you know, in jail on turn signal and bird bath wraps. We're going, we're bad. Yeah, man, turn signals, I'm bad, you know. And then I found out that another person I met at a conference stole Volkswagen rotors, 48 of them. And then there's a guy who did time on a felony rap for stealing shampoo. So it turns out we just do shit like that, you know. I don't know. Anyway, we would have made quite a foursome. We could have had a little gang going for stealing stupid stuff and getting caught at it. That's kind of how I was operating as a kid. I was just doing what I wanted to do. I was, you know, and it wasn't like I had any long-range plans. I really didn't want to live. When I was sober, on several occasions, tried to kill myself. And that was kind of how my life was as a kid. It was intolerable sober, and as a kid, it's hard to get enough to drink often enough. And so, and then when I would drink, I would start to get in trouble. And it was just, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I can remember just every now and then having those moments where I'd go, what's wrong with me? What's the matter with me? And I'd go, I don't know. And just kind of go out and do something else, hit something else, you know, do something else. And that's the kind of the way I was living. And you can imagine, just from the quick picture I painted for you, that there were not a lot of people encouraging me to make something of my life. There were, you know, and we had, you know, I just had weird values as a kid. I just had my way of thinking about things. I remember I had this one teacher. I really liked her. Her name was Marge. I didn't like her at first. Actually, the way I got this teacher was, when I was in high school, there were certain teachers who would really rather not mess with me, and so they would just say stuff like, just don't come to class. Don't get caught, but don't come. You know, just stay away. And one of them was this guy named Scott Nelson, and he and I had that deal for my English class, and I would just drop by whenever I felt like it and pick up stuff to do, and then go off and do it, and then drop it back by, but that was kind of our deal. And so I came waltzing in one day to this class, and he's not there. There's this woman standing there. She gave me a tardy slip. I'm like, she doesn't know who I am, you know. So I explained it to her. Turned out she and Scott had changed classes. She was my new teacher. And she didn't operate the way Scott did. She thought I should come to class, do the work, shut up, and behave. Well, yeah, that's what I thought. And so she and I just started going to war, and eventually she won. And she won for a couple of reasons. One was because it turned out, after a long period of time, that she really cared what happened to me. And I was a sucker for that. Nobody really cared what happened to me, and this woman cared what happened to me. And she would do stuff like, when I didn't have any place to stay, she'd let me come stay at her house. And she'd let me drink with her, and she bought me drinks. And I started to really, really like her. And so I started doing well in her class because of it. I didn't do well anywhere else, just hers, you know. But she would do this thing. After a little while, she started talking to me about going to college. Like, I'm not even going to high school, you know. I mean, I was dropping by, but I wasn't really, you know, going. I had some business things that I needed to attend to there, so I would go occasionally to find customers. She starts talking to me about going to college. I'm like, I don't even know anybody who's been to college but you, you know? I mean, this is dumb. But here's something about me. I don't know if you're like this, but here's how I am. Do something with me a couple of times and it becomes a tradition. It becomes how things are. I just get used to things really fast. So after a few times, that became how it was. I'd come in and I'd say hi and she'd say go to college and I'd go, no, nobody's in my family's ever been to college. And so one day I walked in and she didn't say that. She said, you know, nobody here thinks you can make it in college, and they're probably right. I said, I can do it. So I went to college on a dare. Nobody took me aside and said, listen, let's explain about college. You know, you got to change the way you dress. You got to quit stealing stuff. You got to quit drinking. Nobody said any of that. I just went the way I was. And somebody gave me a button that said, I am a girl, and asked me to wear it so that people were confused. I lived in a dorm, and my roommate wouldn't come in the room because she was afraid to. She slept in the lobby. I've always felt like if I ever see her, I would like to make amends to her, but I doubt that she'll stand still long enough for me to explain. So that was me in college, and I majored in botany so that I could find out where all the edible things were on campus so I'd have something to eat. It worked out. I still remember where a lot of that stuff is. I don't know if it's still there. But anyway, that's kind of how I went to college. And I didn't plan to stay. I was going to go for a semester and show them that I could do it. I went for that semester, and something magical happened. I had this person named Flo. Now, Flo and I were people who would normally not mix. For one thing, Flo ironed her clothes. And the ironing board was attached to the wall, and so if she was ironing and I came out there, she either had to put up with me or quit ironing. I didn't have any friends, so Flo was there, she was captive, I'd go out and talk to her. And so I'd sit out and smoke Lucky Strikes and talk to Flo. One day she said to me, she said, you know, you're really puzzling. I hated it when people said that. She said, you're doing good in your classes, but you never study. And she said, I think you're afraid to try. And I said, I'm not afraid of nothing. And she said, I think you are. And she said, I think you're afraid if you really try, you'll find out you can't do it. And she said, I don't think anybody else needs to know, but I think you do. And she said, why don't you pick something and just secretly do your best? Don't tell anybody, you know, just do it secretly. Now, here's the funny part. I did it secretly. I put towels under my door. Now, I'm up all night drinking, but now I'm studying, so somehow I think they're going to know, you know. stuffing towels under my door. I don't want to be caught doing stuff like that, you know. And what happened to me happened before I ever turned that paper in, because what happened was I learned something incredible. I've never really been able to describe this very well. It's like I always had these pictures in my head, and I found out you could put words around those pictures, and you could put them out here like this, and you could make something new. And it was amazing, and I absolutely fell in love with it. It was the second best thing that had ever happened to me. And I decided I was going to stay. Now, to me, that was a huge turn. I was invited back to speak at that university a few years ago, and the professors that I had in class were at this talk I gave, and I described that experience and talked about how much that changed for me. And because after that, my experience was that I would look at these people and I would think, all of a sudden, it was like this whole world opened up, and I thought, I have to see what these people see. These people see something incredible, and I have to know what it is. Now, my professor said I didn't look that different on the outside. I still look pretty much like the street kid. But I did that, and I continued doing that, and then they made me graduate. And I remember that senior year, all the students were going, man, I can't wait, it's only this many days, and I can't wait, and I can't wait. And I was panicked. I'm thinking, geez, they're going to make me leave. So I went to graduate school. Continued to go to graduate school until I got sober. I have, as a direct result of alcoholism, I have several degrees, including a PhD. You just keep going, and they give you degrees. And then you have to go somewhere else and get another degree. That's what I did. I also took more hours than any human being needs to take for each of those degrees. Because I wasn't trying to get out. I loved being there. It was the best place I'd ever been. And I'm drinking through all of this time, of course. Something started to happen to me, and I did not know what it was. What happened was, and it happened on several levels. One of the levels was that I started being unable to stay somewhere for very long. I would need to leave suddenly. And the other thing that happened is now I am being successful. Now I'm in the youngest to do this and that kind of period. And the more success I got and the more stuff I got on the outside, the more the division between how I felt inside and these outside things was, and it was just killing me. And I would always have this feeling, you know, I'd get nice clothes for something and I'd feel like I was wearing somebody else's clothes. And I'd go and I'd have a job, I'd have a good job, and I'd feel like I was in somebody else's job. And I always felt like they were going to find out. And it would feel like they were, you know, this is the, I always thought I'm going to pick up the wrong fork or something and they're going to go, aha! We knew you didn't belong here. And they're going to drum me out or something. I'm very dramatic, you know, they're going to play the drums and I'm going to have to. And when I would feel that way, if it would get too intense, I would just leave and go somewhere else and do something else. And so I went through these really good jobs and really bad jobs and just weird stuff that I was doing. So that was one of the things that started happening. The other thing that started happening was that I started to know that I was having a problem with drinking. I started to know, not that I was having a problem, but that you were having a problem with my drinking. And that it was causing me some trouble. And so I would do things like I'd get up in the morning and I'd go, okay, look, you got an important meeting today, you cannot drink. We're not drinking today, you got a good job, we're not gonna screw it up this time. Anybody cannot drink for one day, we're just gonna not drink till the end of the day, that'll be fine, we'll just not drink. I remember, for example, this one particular time I was executive director of this agency. This was still during the youngest whatever period. And I had to meet with the board of directors. And the board of directors were people who were very financially well off and very powerful people. Those are the scariest kind for me. And I would start that morning and I would say, you cannot drink. You're not drinking. I don't care how scared you get. You are not having a drink today. Anybody can go till after the board meeting and not have a drink. Because I knew if I had a drink, I couldn't guarantee if I'd even go to the board meeting. You know, it was in that period where I would take one drink and we would just go places and I never knew for sure what was going to happen. It was the weirdest thing. I just had no control over that at all. And it wasn't like this bad thing always happened. It was like I didn't know what was going to happen. So it's like, you know, Russian roulette. And so I'm like, okay, we're not having a drink. We're just going to get till after the meeting. I went to the work that day. I'm not drinking. I've made a resolution not to drink. I'm sitting at my desk, I'm working, and about every 5 minutes, I'm imagining myself walking in that board meeting and going, I can't walk in there. I cannot go in there with those people. I mean, they're going to find out. You know, I've gotten away with it this long, but they're going to find out. And I think, no, come on, just do your work. And about lunchtime, I thought, you know, I'm going to go to that little French restaurant. I'm not going to drink. I'm just going to go there because it's a fancy restaurant, and they'll treat me really nice, and I'll hold on to that feeling through the board meeting, and I can make it. And I went to that restaurant, and to this day, I don't remember ordering a drink. What I remember is this sound. Just hearing that glass hit that table, and looking there, and I had drank a glass of wine. And then I did something which for me is fatal. I went, oh, well, what the hell? And I had at least two more glasses of wine that I know about. And at that point, my body and mind separated. I don't know where we went, but when we got back together, we were in the board meeting. I hate that. I don't know what we've been doing. I have no idea. You know, my first thing I always do is make sure I still have on my clothes. And that they're still right side out, and they're mine. You know, I mean, I checked all of those things, just the basics. You know, you got to get down to fundamentals. All of that was okay. And then I thought, they're going to know. And so I decided, you know, I get these brainstorms when I'm drinking. I don't know about you guys. I have sudden inspirational thoughts. And that day, my sudden inspirational thought was, I'll just sit really still, and they won't know. Now, I think there's nothing that looks drunker than a drunk trying to sit really still. Plus, the eyes were not the problem. They could smell me in the entire room, and it wasn't like they had some subtle clue to figure this out, you know? And I got through that meeting. It lasted about 4 months, it felt like. And that was one of those nights that I went home, and I sat down on the side of my bed, and I said, what is the matter with you? What's wrong with you? You know, and I'd just go, I don't know, I'm just crazy. No, people always told me I was crazy. I'm just crazy. It's nuts. I just didn't know what it was. And I'll tell you, if you'd followed me around in a helicopter through my life up to that point, you would have told me a million times that I was an alcoholic. But if you'd hooked me up to a lie detector that day and asked me if I was an alcoholic, I would have said no, and that needle wouldn't have moved. Because I knew what an alcoholic was. It was somebody who drinks day and night, continuously, can't stop, and when they stop, their life gets better. I didn't drink continuously day and night, and when I stopped drinking, my life got worse. I figure I can't be an alcoholic. Alcoholics, everybody says to alcoholics, quit drinking and everything will be okay. I secretly knew when I quit drinking, things are not okay. When I quit, here's how it is for me when I quit drinking. I quit drinking and I go, that's it. I'm not drinking anymore. I'm through. I'm not drinking. I'm done drinking. I'm through. I'm a teetotaler. I'm a non-drinker. This is cool. I'm not drinking. This is good. Feeling good. Doing good. Not going to get, you know, no more trouble. I'm not drinking. This is good. This is really good. And then it starts to wind up. And then I'm like, okay, this is good. Okay, all right. It's all right. I'm fine. I'm not drinking. This is really good. God, the lights are bright in here. What's the matter with that guy over there? And what's the matter with him? And look at her. And Jesus, he can't talk to me that way. And then right before it feels like I'm going to spin right out of my body, I take a drink. And it goes. And you can see how if you're like that, it's hard to think that alcohol is your problem, you know? My problem is who I am. Alcohol is the solution. And the only problem is that alcohol as a solution takes me places and makes things happen to me that are problematic. The other thing that started happening to me was that I think I told you that alcohol got real unpredictable for me. And I went through a period and it got more and more unpredictable. And my last run, I ran to Texas. We have a lot of Texas people here, so I'd like to say that I chose it because it's such a wonderful place to live. I just, you know, I could have gone left or right. I happened to go right, you know, and went to Texas and went to go to graduate school, of course. And while I was in Texas, it got much worse. And it got to the place where there were days when I could drink for 4 or 5 or 6 days and stay mentally sober. I would get physically drunk, but it wouldn't take care of that blackness inside anymore, and it wouldn't do that thing anymore. It would just, and it was awful. It was the worst period of my life, and I tried lots of different things during that period. I would have tried anything you had that I thought would relieve anything. And during that time, the other thing that happened to me was that I got to the place where I couldn't read anymore. You know, I tried two things to keep me alive. I had booze, And I had that thing where I could put those words around those ideas and put those ideas out there. And I got to a place where I couldn't do that anymore. I couldn't think and I couldn't read. Just couldn't hold a thought. I could read, but I couldn't tell you when I got to the end of the sentence if it was the same sentence I'd started on. And I couldn't tell you what it meant. And it was really scary. And the feeling I had during that time, there was a person who was very religious who was talking with me. And I believed that God hated me. I thought, the way it looked to me was, I believed there was a God, and it looked to me like God gave me booze, and God gave me this thing where I could think and read and study. And then God got me so that I really enjoyed those and depended on them, and then went, I'm taking those away, now let's see you do it. And that was the way it looked to me. And this religious person started talking to me, and she told me that God hated me because of the people I was sleeping with. And I believed her. So I got married. Now, I have no idea what his story is, why he married me, but we knew each other for 3 weeks. I was just trying to get God off my ass. Yeah. That was, you know, I told you I would have done anything, you know, and if it married, fine, I'll do that. And I got married. Now, the problem is if you're only getting married to get God off your ass, you don't think past getting married. You know, I woke up the next morning and there he was, and I thought, go away, you know. In fact, I said that to him. I said, why don't you just go away? And he said, you know, I'm not real thrilled about you either. And that began this wonderful relationship that we had. I'm trying my best to get, you know, please God. Things were not getting better. Now he's there, and he has comments about my drinking. He didn't get it. I mean, he would say stuff to me like, why do you drink before we go to the party? You can't go to the party if you don't drink before you go to the party. They may not have enough. They never do have enough. And they don't serve it fast enough. You know, you can't depend on them for something as important as that. And he also told me, I accidentally got pregnant. It turns out that being an unsuitable mother is not good birth control. And now I'm pregnant. And so I knew that this was more of God's punishment, and I knew there'd be something wrong with that baby, and it wasn't going to be my fault. So I quit smoking, I quit drinking, I went on a women, infants, and children nutrition thing where I ate stupid things like broccoli. And that baby was 10 pounds when he was born. I should have kept eating junk food, you know. And he was in such good health that the insurance wouldn't pay for him to stay in the hospital. And during that period, my husband was the only person who correctly diagnosed my case. He said, you know, you have a non-drinking problem. He said, you are nuts when you're not drinking. Please drink. He was the only person who ever got it right. He brought me a bottle of wine to the hospital the day my son was born. I drank it because it was a gift. You know, very soon after that, I realized that he was the problem. That's what was wrong with my life. I should have never done that. I did all of that. I married him. I tried to turn into a wife, and I tried to become this other person that would be somebody who would marry him, and it didn't work. Now I had this baby. Things were getting worse. God was still mad at me. Figured, God's going to be mad at me. Fine. I'll be mad back. We're going to war. I got rid of that husband, and let me tell you also that when that baby was born, I was so scared, you know, because in those moments, in those rare moments where I actually told myself the truth, I was so afraid I was going to hurt that baby, because I had been such a violent person, I'd been in such a violent family, and, you know, when I was young, when I was drinking, I'd had a dog, and my dog got out and was killed by the dog next door. And I didn't go save that dog because I was drinking. And I thought, that's how I'll be. This little baby will get hurt. And I thought, I'm so dead inside, I won't care about him. You know, I'll forget him. I won't know to think about him. And when that baby was born, it was like I had all this blackness inside. It was like this laser beam from him to me. And I loved somebody for fun and for free for the first time in my life. And I didn't want him to have somebody like me for a mother. And I would tell him every night, I'd put him in bed, and I'd look at him, and I'd think, I'm so sorry that you got me for a mother, because I really care about you. whenever I got angry, I would just hand him to whoever was close by because I was so afraid I'd hurt him. I'd just go, here, please take this baby. And the fact is, I did hurt him. He was 6 when I got sober, and when I would raise my voice, he would go and get in the tub and cover his head. I've now been sober over twice as long as I drank in his life. I figure we're even. So I had this little boy. I'd gotten rid of that husband. Things were just awful. I was at the end of it. Nothing was working. The booze wasn't working anymore. I didn't know what was wrong with me. And I figured the only solution I had was the one I had repeatedly tried as a kid. I just needed to kill myself. I needed to get out of here. And so what I did was, I thought I had been too impulsive before, because I would try to kill myself on impulse. I would be sitting on the top of a mountain and go, screw it, and drive down the mountain. You know, stuff like that didn't work. And so I thought, I just need to think it out better, and I need to make sure my kid is taken care of, and I need to make sure that God will let me go. And by now I had these voices in my head as a result of things I was doing when I couldn't get booze. And the voices were, if you're new, and you got those voices, that's not God. God, that's not God. God does not speak to people who have really less than 5 years directly. God only speaks through your sponsor. As Clancy says, your sponsor is not God, but it is God's official representative on earth where you're concerned. But I didn't know that then, and I thought God and I were having conversations. God does not also speak through heater vents, I want you to know. I thought me and God were having conversations, and I thought we made a deal, and I thought the deal was that if I'd try everything I hadn't tried and prove it didn't work, God would let me get out of here. So I got a job at a university. How I got that job, I will never know. Because they had insurance, and my son would be taken care of. I got a woman to move in with me so that she would, actually got her to leave her husband and move in with me, I'm sorry to say. So that she would take care of my son, because I figured she'd get attached to him, and then when I died, she'd take care of him, and I put it in my will, so she'd feel guilty if she didn't. And then everything anybody suggested me to try, I tried. And during this time, this woman, the mother of the woman I got to move in with me, had been in Al-Anon for a long time. And she started talking to me, and she said, you need to go to ACA. I think there's alcoholism in your family. See, you talk to me about alcohol, I don't talk to you anymore. That's just, you know, how that is. But she somehow snuck up on my blind side, and she told me to go to ACA. I didn't know what that was. I said, how many times you got to go? She said, 6. I said, fine. I'm not trying to get any help. I'm trying to tick off the stuff. I'm going to do all this stuff and prove it doesn't work and get out of here. So I went to that meeting, and I can't tell you anything they said, but I met somebody at the meeting who gave me a tape. She had been to Crested Butte to a conference that I still go to every year, and had heard this woman on this tape. She says she still don't know why she gave me the tape. She gave me this tape. Now, I've got this tape. I don't know what it is. I mean, I barely know about you guys. I got this tape, so I don't want to listen to it, because I like contempt prior to investigation. I know I'm not going to like it, whatever it is. And so, but I also have this other problem. The other problem I have is I can't stand not knowing stuff, you know. So I got this tape. I don't know what's on it. And so every time I got in my car, I'd have this thing going on where I'm going, wonder what's on that tape. I don't care. Yeah, but I wonder what's on it. I don't care. I'm not listening to it. Some mantra, some like lecture on the evils of alcohol or something. I'm not listening to that shit. Yeah, but I wonder what it is. Maybe it's not that, you know. And so finally one day I pick up the stupid tape and put it in there. And this woman starts telling her story. And it was June G from Los Angeles, California. And I heard somebody for the first time who was just like me. She talked about what it was like to be her, and it was what it was like to be me. And she knew about that feeling like they're going to come and get you. And she knew about that feeling of having lived one life and moving to another life and not quite being able to get there. And she said that what was wrong with her was alcoholism, and I thought that can't possibly be it. But at the end of that tape, she talked about how she wanted to be who she was. She wanted to be wearing the dress she was wearing. She wanted to feel the way she felt. And I remember listening to that and thinking, that'll never happen for me. But maybe that's it. I mean, I just didn't see how it could be. And so I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not get the chip the first night because it was a big, long meeting like this, and they didn't ask at the beginning. I mean, they asked at the beginning. I wasn't walking up there at the beginning, and they never asked at the end. Every meeting I chair, I was asked at the end, because by the end of the meeting, I wasn't the same as I was at the beginning. Now, I went to that meeting. I was not newcomer of the year. I was not one of those kind of newcomers who comes in and wants help and does what you, you know. I went in, I had a hat pulled down over my face, and I would cross my arms like this, and I would get with my back to the wall, and I would glare at anybody who tried to sit anywhere near me. I wanted this whole little set of chairs to myself. And I don't want you coming by me. And I was pretty good at it. I could do it. I could make big guys back off. And then every now and then, somebody with a little more sobriety was just real unimpressed. I mean, this one little woman, I'd go to the Saturday morning meeting.